You're listening to the Bleed in the Garden State podcast, presented by BetOnline.
What is going on, friends, family, people we know, people we don't know, people we like to get to know? How you doing? All are welcome at the Bleed in the Garden State podcast. I am your co-host, Alex Schoen. Super excited about today's episode. Pete Medhurst, one of the great voices of the Big Ten Network, joined me. And we discussed a lot of awesome topics. The Big Ten Network just dropped their TV schedule. So we talked about that, the Big Ten versus the ACC. We also talked about the state of college lacrosse, the state of Rutgers, the state of the Big Ten, and a lot of other interesting topics. Pete was awesome. Great guy. Was very generous with his time. A lot of great advice, too, in terms of broadcasting and things like that. So listen, let's get to the magic. So you can catch this guy on the afternoon drive on 106.7 The Fan in the D.C. area. He's one of the great voices of Big Ten lacrosse, the voice of Navy athletics. Ladies and gentlemen, Pete Medhurst.
Welcome inside, everybody. Pete Medhurst alongside Mark Dixon.
Live from Maryland Stadium in College Park, Maryland. Today, it's number 3 Maryland taking on number 4 Rutgers. Rutgers on Holmgren. Shot, he scores. David Sprock, the Joker out of Dallas.
The Eastern Night of Piscataway, New Jersey is Highpoint Solutions Stadium. Plays host to the Rutgers Scarlet Knights and the Maryland Terrapins. George. Comes back to his right shoulder. Davis Allen stays with him. George comes inside. Troops and Sparks.
Pete, how you doing? Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Glad to do it. Alex, how you doing?
I'm good. You know, during my prep for this interview, I didn't realize how many sports you did. Football, basketball, lacrosse, racing. That's super awesome. How do you balance that all?
That's a great question. I basically look at the schedule that I get and try to put as much prep time on all the different events that I have. Very blessed, especially at Navy. We have 33 varsity sports. I have an unbelievable sports information staff there that treats all their sports, just as important as, you know, football and basketball is to a lot of schools. Every sport at Navy is incredibly important to that sports information staff and their assistance and preparation for all of that stuff. We do, you know, water polo, baseball, wrestling. We've done track and field before. We do volleyball, obviously, along with men's and women's basketball, men's and women's lacrosse, football. We do an awful lot of sports at Navy. We're blessed from that standpoint. But without their help in preparation, and I think the sports information people across the college landscape, and I mean, look, broadcasting college sports is my passion. It's my life. It's what I, you know, have lived for from the time I was doing Division III at Salisbury, you know, back in the late 80s and early 90s. And I think our sports information people, they're the lifeblood of all of these broadcasts that you see now. I mean, with the ESPN pluses, the Big Ten plus, Fox Sports plus, I mean, it's opened up so many avenues to so many broadcasts now that were never happening before outside of maybe the team's local radio broadcast. It's required a lot more work of those sports information people, and they've answered the call without question. And I think that is one of the reasons why we're able to do so much now, because we get so much great assistance and cooperation from those folks and many of the coaches along the way, because without their cooperation, you don't really have many stories to tell about a lot of the great athletes and programs that we're able to cover.
Absolutely. It takes a village. Do you know Rob Camposa, by the way? He's in the Navy department.
Yes. Yes. He's been working with our lacrosse program now for the last several seasons, and has certainly made a great difference there. And, you know, people like Rob and many others in lacrosse, because we have some sports at the college level that still don't get the same respect overall from a financial standpoint and some of the rules within the college game. I mean, guys like Rob, who start out as volunteers in your program, I mean, that work that they do is incredible because, you know, I mean, one of my sons is in college coaching in basketball, and he started out as a volunteer. And I can tell you, when those guys are volunteering, especially when they're a little bit younger, mom and dad are paying some of that freight at that point. So they're really doing a yeoman service. And there's guys like Rob's all over college lacrosse in particular, because our staffs are just not allowed to be that big right now in the sport. And there are tremendous men and women throughout men's and women's college lacrosse right now that are contributing on a volunteer basis. And those people are invaluable to the success of a lot of programs out there right now.
Absolutely. Rob was with us at Rutgers for my redshirt freshman and sophomore year. He did a tremendous job. I certainly know the struggle of being a volunteer assistant. It doesn't really matter if you're at a school that's, I guess, in the limelight of college lacrosse, like a top five team, or a team that is trying to find its way. Volunteers, volunteer, you're all putting in the same work. And it's a lot of work. I remember most of my days were doing laundry.
Yeah. I mean, it's again, I think it's because of, you know, I think there are a lot of programs that would put the resources in if the rules allowed them to have more people on a paid basis. It's just
how
hold those staffs and those schools back. I guess, you know, the argument, I guess, on the college level would be to keep the playing field level. But, you know, if schools want to continue to, in my mind, if schools want to put the resources into developing their programs, developing their student athletes, I think schools should be allowed to do that. And, you know, even if it means putting a limit on a stipend for a quote volunteer or a part-time assistant coach, if you want to do that. But I really think we need to compensate these people in some way, shape or form for the amount of work, because they're really doing full-time jobs under a volunteer title.
Absolutely. And I feel like we could talk about this for forever, because it's such an interesting subject and one that affects our sport in terms of the overall development of the younger student athletes and the younger coaches, the future of the game, because a lot of those guys start out as volunteers and they go through the struggle, and sometimes it pays off and sometimes it doesn't. You know, the Big Ten schedule, I mean, huge fan of you and Joe Beninati, Mark Dixon, you guys are the voices of the Big Ten, some of the best in the business in sports overall. The schedule just came out for men's and women's. I guess, what's your initial thoughts on the schedule? A lot of great matchups in Big Ten play, but also, you know, out of conference, big time Big Ten ACC matchups.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I mean, you look at, you know, the Maryland schedule, the Virginia schedule, the Duke schedule, North Carolina schedule, and then you go look at the Big Ten teams. They're all challenging each other. You know, Maryland crossing over to play, you know, Virginia and vice versa. I mean, they don't have to take those games if they don't want to. They can find somebody else to play. But let's face it, the college lacrosse world is going to show up at Audi Field, I think, very well for that contest between Maryland and Virginia coming up on March the 19th. Very jealous that the Caps aren't playing that night, so Joe Beninati gets that assignment. But, I mean, what a game that's going to be. And we know at some point those two obviously are major title contenders. But just the fact that John Tillman and you know, Lars Tiffany are willing to schedule that game, because I think the sport and the audience, as much as the players themselves, the players live for these kind of games. They want to play these types of games. And certainly I think in terms of promoting the game, to be able to do it, to being willing to do it at Audi Field, put it on a neutral field where we can probably get a little bit bigger crowd. I can't wait. I think it's going to be a great game for the audience. But again, it's about teams in the Big Ten and the ACC trying to challenge themselves, because the Ivies are back now in full effect. So where you may have had some leeway before, you know, last year, because we didn't have, you know, we didn't have the full complement of teams competing. Now that we do, criteria is going to mean something. It's going to mean something again. And when you have a strong schedule, again, we know what that means when the discussion comes down to a couple of teams. Did you play a couple of heavyweights and try to challenge yourself? Or, you know, did you play some teams that aren't quite as strong? And we all know that more often than not, when the committee weighs that criteria, those who try to challenge themselves, if win totals and results are comparable, the team that tries to challenge itself is likely to, you know, get the nod. And you know, kudos to these teams for putting these games on display, because I know as fans, we love them. They're willing to take them now onto weeknights. When you go down and look at that schedule, I think Duke's got a Thursday night game, because we're now willing to showcase these games on a TV moment all by themselves. Big Ten on Sunday nights. I mean, obviously up at Rutgers. Rutgers got a ton of Sunday night games.
Oh, it's great. It was awesome. You know,
I've got the Hopkins-Rutgers game coming up on April the 3rd. Looking forward to that. So, and I think in the years I've been doing lacrosse on the Big Ten Network now, I think I've had Rutgers more than anybody, and especially since they started to go to the Sunday night package. But I think what they have found between the TV network, but more importantly, the teams, they're like, hey, we're capitalizing in this Sunday night window at 7 o'clock. We're a standalone game, and the world is watching us, you know, from a lacrosse perspective. So I think the Big Ten schools have embraced this Sunday night availability. I know Mark and I have found tremendous response within the lacrosse community while broadcasting those games. So we know people are watching, and I think it's a great job by the Big Ten to work with the network, the schools, to pull this off on Sunday nights, because I think it's been a real positive for the league.
Oh, it's tremendous. I'll tell you, from a player's perspective, that Sunday night game is awesome. It's like, it's like the equivalent of Sunday night football on NBC, like in lacrosse, like everyone's watching. Like,
and let's face it, right now in the spring, as long as baseball wants to sit on sidelines, you know, there's not a lot of competition out there right now. There is no Sunday night baseball game to compete with lacrosse here as we head into March and early April. So that's even more potential casual eyeballs that you may get on the sport when someone's channel surfing that we may not have gotten in the past. And I think, you know, we all know the diehards are always going to tune in to lacrosse on Saturdays, Sundays, even if it's a weeknight game, like I talked about, you know, with the ACC playing on Thursday night at one point. We always will get the diehards, but I think it's bringing more casual fans in to view this exciting sport and to see, you know, the entertainment payoff, I think, that it brings. Maybe eventually we get those people to not only tune in, but then show up at our stadiums to watch these athletes in person. Because just like I tell people in hockey, you can watch hockey on TV. You know, you can watch Joe Beninati and Craig Lachlan do Capitals games on TV and be incredibly entertained watching on TV. But I think lacrosse and I think hockey in the same vein, to see them in person, to see how plays develop, to see transition plays developing from one end to the other, when a long pole is, this big athletic long pole is striding down the field, all of a sudden that guy cranks up this long pole and just unleashes on a goalie from about 15 yards. You know, there's so much excitement in our game. And I think these exclusive windows that we're finding in the spring TV schedule are now showing people just that. And I hope we can continue to attract some casual sports fans, people that like sports. You know, they flip the channel, they see it. Hey, I'm going to stick around. Because, I mean, you look at these Maryland Rutgers games. I've been blessed to do a couple of these that go into overtime or right down to the wire. I mean, there's nothing like it. I mean, there's nothing like sports that come down to the final minute with a team trying to score the game-winning goal or the goalie that makes the great save late in a contest. So I'm hoping we can start to attract some more casual sports fans to come watch what I feel is an incredible sport. I played baseball in high school. I knew nothing about lacrosse other than the object of it when I left high school. But covering it as a high school sports stringer in my area in Anne Arundel County in Maryland, which is a tremendous hotbed. It's one of the, you know, best places for high school lacrosse in the country. I got to know it at that level, and I'm glad I opened my mind to it back then, because it's allowed me to be able to broadcast it now for 24 years. And in fact, longer than that, because I go back to when I was doing Salisbury's games. That was the first game I broadcast at Salisbury and Hobart in one of the greatest Division III games. In fact, of all the games I've broadcast, it's in the top five, maybe only eclipsed by the 2004 national championship game when Navy played Syracuse. Hobart wins 13-12 in a driving, pouring rain mud bog in Salisbury at Seagull Stadium that day when Dave Yurick was in the midst of winning, I think it was 13 straight Division III titles. And one of the guys on his team, and to this day, every time I have a Penn State game, we talk about it. Jeff Tambrode was on that Hobart team, the coach of Penn State right now, that played there. So we always reminisce about those days where Hobart just had an incredible run of Division III success. And at that time, we're also beating Division I teams that they were playing on their schedule.
Mark Van Arsdale, he played there as well, offensive coordinator for Loyola. I don't know if he played with Jeff Tambrode, but I know he did play there, right?
I can look the roster. You might be right, though. I mean, you might be right because it was all right around the same time. But, I mean, at that time, you know, the Salisbury program was really just taking off under Jim Berkman.
Tremendous coach.
To see what he has built that program into today, I mean, it's just to be able to see what Jim has done, and he has stayed there. I mean, I'm sure there were opportunities for that he could have left Salisbury somewhere along the way, but he has stayed there the entire time, and he has just developed an unbelievable program there on the Division III level.
They're competing against Division I schools for recruits too. Like, it's they're very impressive.
Well, I mean, I think, again, I think if you're a good player, I think there's a route into the PLL for you, even if you're a Division III player and you're really good. I think there's a route into that. And I think there's a route into, you know, MLL as well, if you want to continue to play lacrosse afterwards. Otherwise, think about it. We're trying to achieve degrees. We've got a number of unbelievable schools academically that play this sport. So you find your fit. Find your fit where you're going to play. Find your fit where you're going to be able to do your work academically, because we're still the object in lacrosse. We're still trying to get degrees from unbelievable schools that play. And I think that's the one thing about this sport. We've got some unbelievable schools academically that play this thing. And if you can use lacrosse as that vehicle to get to one of these spectacular places, that as soon as somebody in a business world sees that school on your resume, your resume is at least going to get near the top of that list. You're going to get an interview because we've got so many unbelievable institutions that play this sport. Ultimately, you got to find the fit athletically and academically. And, you know, if it means choosing D3 over D1 or D2 over D1 right now because you may play sooner and enjoy yourself more, you know, why not?
That's a good point. I think with our sport, and I do think because there hasn't – I mean, when did pro lacrosse start? Like early 2000s? I think because there wasn't really much of a – like an NFL, an NHL, like a big time – like it couldn't be your number one financial like job. I agree with you. I think like a big emphasis was on the school and the – maybe less on the sport. Whereas in football, you'll see guys – go to a Power Five school, even though it might not be the greatest fit for them, but it's a Power Five school. They're going to go to the NFL and potentially make generational type money.
I mean, and keep in mind, the indoor game has been around forever. I mean, we had an indoor team playing in Washington here, you know, like in the 80s. I think it was the Washington Warthogs were an indoor team. So, I mean, the indoor game has been, I mean, the box game's been around for a long time, but we, you know, getting a organized, financially stable, professional league on the outside just has taken a lot longer. And, you know, hopefully now what we're seeing with the PLL and the entertainment that it's bringing, hopefully that will be able to continue, you know, for a long time. So it gives guys that want to continue to play lacrosse after they graduate and after their eligibility is exhausted, a chance to go play the game still at a high level where we entertain the masses, because we know people, again, strong core audience in this sport right now. And I think the concept, you know, that Paul and Michael and the folks at PLL have come up with, I think is really good. And I think it has a chance for long-term growth and success. And what we're doing with the indoor game continuously right now, exciting, mega exciting product. So we've got so many avenues right now for this game to continue to grow for players beyond what they're doing at the college level. And that's really all you can ask for at this point. And I think both products, both indoor and outdoor, are incredibly exciting.
Absolutely. I'm a huge fan of both indoor and outdoor. I watch almost every PLL game. I watch as many indoor games as I can because there's so many of them. It's hard to keep track. Now that they're on ESPN Plus, it's like, damn, which one do I watch?
No doubt. But and two completely distinctly different games. But what we're seeing from a athletic standpoint from all these athletes, both indoor and outdoor, just continues to show you the amazing skill that they have and is still an opportunity to put this on display.
Absolutely. And I guess shifting gears a little bit to the Big Ten in terms of the state of the Big Ten. I guess what has been your initial impressions of the conference so far this year? I mean, five out of the six teams, I believe, are ranked in the top 20.
I think the people that are playing, I think they all have prioritized the sport to a certain extent. I think all the programs care about the product that they're putting out there. They're putting resources into the product right now. And that's all you can ask for because, you know, look, I mean, still in parts of the country, for a Michigan to start up, you know, lacrosse and join in with some look. I mean, let's face it, the other groups are powerhouses, but they took that challenge on and they want to be a part of it. They continue to put resources into it now and continue to grow yearly as a product at a non-traditional place like that. The rest of the league, I mean, look, I mean, it doesn't matter what Saturday or Sunday you're playing if you don't bring your A game. You know, we even saw as much as Hopkins struggled, you know, with a new coach last year. By the end of the season, they were playing good lacrosse. You saw that, obviously, in the tournament. So, you know, they're coming back to that level eventually that we in the sport expect from them. So when you have a league that no matter what day you're playing, anybody can win, that's all you can ask for from a parity standpoint. Is Maryland maybe slightly ahead right now? I mean, you could say that. Certainly their results bear that out. But that doesn't mean that a Rutgers, a Penn State, an Ohio State, you know, a Michigan, a Hopkins can't jump up at any point if Maryland doesn't bring its A product and win the game. And that's all you look for when you're looking for a depth of a conference. And we all know right now that the ACC plays this, you know, incredible, entertaining style. I mean, Virginia, Duke, Carolina, Syracuse, they're putting up goals, you know, at a lightning rate in a lot of games. But from the Big Ten has said, okay, we see you and we see the committee, you know, and everybody. I mean, look, ESPN has the contract with the ACC and Anish and Quint and Paul and all them talking about how great the Atlantic Coast Conference is, but let's not shortchange the Big Ten either. Those programs are answering the call and trying to get back to that same level as the depth of a conference. And that's why I think we're in for an incredible year overall in this sport. When you look at the Big Ten, you look at the ACC, you look at a Penn despite getting, you know, giving up 51 shots, beating a Duke in overtime, 14-13. So with the Ivies back in this thing, I think we've got, again, another incredible year. The Patriot League has started. You know, I think the Patriot League's got good depth. They've had a couple of tough results in close games. Rutgers beat Army in a great game. Loyola's off to a bit of a slow start as well. Navy, I think you're going to see them really – I think Navy is going to change in the next couple of weeks, and you're going to see them start to take a significant step forward as well. With their program, is they've got Patriot League play starting with Lehigh, another great team for Kevin Cassis coming up this week. So I think the depth of the sport is great. It puts, you know, an onus on your results each and every week. But I think the Big Ten, I mean, top to bottom, every week, Alex, we're going to have great games and they're going to be competitive games. And if you don't bring your A product, you can lose.
I think so too. And I've always been a fan of the Big Ten conference. I've always thought the Big Ten, just playing in it, and it's a little biased opinion, was right there with the ACC. Obviously, ACC, ESPN, they do a fantastic job. I love watching their games. Great conference. But I've always felt like the Big Ten was a little slighted on Selection Sunday, you know, being a Rutgers guy, always being on the bubble and seeing the ACC has no automatic qualifier, which I think they got to do something about that. They got to get one of these really good teams to be an affiliate member or something like that, if they can, because I think that would be great for the sport, because what it would also do is, correct me if I'm wrong, would also make their another play-in game again, and one of those other guys can get in to the tournament, one of the smaller schools, mid-majors, like it used to be.
I'm with you on that. I mean, look, it's conference membership in every sport right now is an incredibly difficult the description I'm looking for. It's an incredibly difficult table for administrations right now to figure out what's the best fit for us. How do we take care of our Olympic sports in a lot of respects? Because I think you can't discount the effect that what your Olympic sports will have to endure in conference membership. But, you know, there's no reason why, you know, if you're the ACC, reach out to somebody, get with your coaches, say, hey, you know, who are some programs you think, you know, might be willing to come over here, but also come with the quality that we expect in the ACC. Because I don't think the ACC wants an associate member just to have an associate member. I think they want somebody to come that's going to bring some cachet eventually to the league. Because to bring somebody for scheduling purposes and to have another team, that doesn't do anything for you. Bringing somebody that's going to commit resources to the program and want to play competitive lacrosse at that level, those are the teams you need to target and see if there's interest in that moving in that direction.
Yeah, it's got to be like a Hopkins in the Big Ten. Like I, from what I've read and people I've talked to, Hopkins's presence in the medical community and how good of a research institution it is really, really matched well with the Big Ten research institutions. And obviously Hopkins' story tradition, they bring a lot to the conference. And then when you combine that with Maryland, that brings a ton to the conference as well with having that in-state rivalry in the conference. So yeah, I think it would be awesome. Now from a player's perspective, there's a little bias when I say they should add one, because I would have loved for them to have an AQ, for them to be an extra spot when I played. Because it's like on Selection Sunday, it's like, okay, there's 9 spots. All right, like regardless of if you agree or disagree, all the ACCs are getting in. So it's a bunch of us are competing for 4 spots. So like, do you think there is a little bit of bias come Selection Sunday when it comes to that process?
You know, I don't know if I'd call it bias. I think that's a strong word, but I think there's perception out there. And we see this all the time in college sports. We perceive the SEC top to bottom to be the best in football. We certainly put the Big Ten East in football, you know, where Rutgers is a member. They know how tough that division is. I mean, the Big Ten East and the SEC West are by far the 2 toughest divisions in college football. So there's this perception that overall, because you have strength there, that their entire league is better than everybody in the Big 12, everybody in the ACC, everybody in the Pac-12. And I think what we've done here, because the ACC has created an incredibly entertaining style of lacrosse, and we're seeing great games every night.
And they're the OGs. Like they're the most storied programs. Like they've been around the longest.
That's exactly right. But because they're playing such an entertaining style of lacrosse, and it's played at a really good quality, particularly offensively, you create the perception that your product is better than everybody else's. And from think about it, that's what marketing is all about. And that's what the marketing genius is between the ACC and their TV partner ESPN. Is they've created this perception out there that their product is the best in the game right now. And it's pending on everybody else to prove that they aren't. And that's why it's great to see regular season matchups where a Maryland and Virginia cross over during the course of the regular season. Because the only way to get your league on that level is to go play them in the regular season and prove that you can win those games against those teams and that your product is on that level. So I think that is what helps create some of these regular season matchups now, where I think the Big Ten, the Ivies realize, if we're going to put doubt in the committee's mind, if we're going to change that perception that their product is best, we've got to go play them. And more importantly, we've got to go beat them like Penn did against Duke. It's a gigantic win for the Quakers to be able to go win that game against the Blue Devils the way they did.
I think Ohio State showing against Notre Dame and Maryland showing against Virginia is going to be huge for the league as a whole. And it's cool. And listen, like, they're all quality teams, all 11 ACC, Big Ten, and Ivies too. And I think lacrosse is a sport where it's not like football, where everything is in the Power Five in comparison to everyone else. I think when you look at lacrosse, it's a sport where it's just, you can get really good players in any, from anywhere. Division III guys coming to the D1 level, mid-major guys going up to ACC, Big Ten, Patriot League teams going to different types of places and having success. I mean, you look at a goalie like Adler at Duke, who was at St. Joe's, which is a mid-major school. He's coming up. He's one of the best goalies in the country. You look at Colin Kearse at Rutgers. He goes from Lehigh, who's a very good team in the Patriot League, but he doesn't start a game in his career at Lehigh. And then he comes and he is arguably the best goalie in the country. So I think lacrosse is just an interesting sport opposed to like a football or a basketball where you don't see as much mid-major success.
Well, I think also too, you look at the top skilled guys in D3, a lot of them can contribute on D1 rosters. I mean, I don't think there's
a question about that. And they do.
And look, that's part of the game that we're playing now, where it's so easy to transfer at all levels. As you mentioned with, you know, Kearse coming over from Lehigh and having the year that he did. But I mean, that's the part of the game right now as well that is such a challenge to coaches, because unlike in the NFL, you know, in the NFL, you know, we're signing Adam Charlambides to like a 7-year deal, and we know he's going to be there for 7 seasons. But now you get a player that's of really good quality. You have to re-recruit that guy every year. You basically have to say, hey, you're gonna stay with us for next year, right? I mean, because of the portal and what it does now, not only are you looking at obviously potential high school products out there, you're also looking at other areas. And hey, is there a good D3 guy that's jumped in the portal that might seek a chance to play at the Division I level before they graduate or something like that? So it's really changed the game in all facets of college athletics, especially now where almost every sport, I believe, has at least the one time transfer without a penalty. You can play right away. It's really changed the game in college athletics, but it's also, it makes you, not only do you have to have a team that is successful, but it really behooves you to have a great culture and a product that kids want to be in. Because if they're not comfortable with your product, they know they can go find another customer for their services pretty easily right now in the transfer portal. So that's why not only winning, but having a great culture to be around, obviously a terrific academic area for students to flourish as well. You really have to have all of those now, because if a kid's not happy from a culture standpoint, might be a good player, might be playing, might even be getting good results. But if he's not happy from an, either an academic fit or a culture fit, he can go find, sunnier pastures somewhere else pretty easily right now in all sports.
I couldn't agree more. And as someone who transferred pre-transfer portal, it was very difficult. I started out at Syracuse and transferred over to Rutgers, but it was very difficult in terms of like, you had to get a release and then you had to basically, like, you were a high school kid again, send out emails, let people know, hey, I'm available, here's my release, blah, blah, blah. Now it's like you put your name in a portal, and then like all the coaches get like all your information, like instantly you could be signed the next day.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I know what that's like. I mean, my younger son of two, both my sons play college basketball. One played on the D3 and one played on the D1 level and scored 1,000 points, but he also transferred after 2 years. His school that he was at originally dropped his major, so he ended up transferring. We're sitting there, you know, we apply for a waiver, and you're sitting there playing the waiting game. And, you know, now it's very easy. You just put your name in a portal, and, you know, it's like going shopping on Amazon for college coaches right now. They just pull up. I mean, literally, a lot of schools have somebody that checks the portal every day, just randomly check the portal every day, see if, you know, who's in it. And if you find somebody that, you know, there may be kids that you tried to recruit that went somewhere else, but they end up in the portal. So now, hey, here's another opportunity. We really felt we had a great relationship with this kid in the recruiting process. You know, he's in the portal now. Let's see if we can bring him in, you know, this time and see if maybe we can make him part of our program. And I think you're seeing a lot of that out there daily in college athletics now. It's really been a game changer.
And that's why you never burn bridges in the recruiting process. You know, I used to tell kids all the time when I was coaching high school, when I was coaching college, like, you just never know what's going to happen to you. You never know what's going to happen to them. Like, let's say you're a high school junior and you get recruited by XYZ school, and XYZ school isn't exactly what you want for whatever reason. But a year later, that guy could be at the school that you're really interested in. And he's going to remember, like, how you treated him. Did you respond? Were you respectful? And that's something I don't think kids really realize when they're in high school.
You know who burns bridges faster? It's not kids. It's mom and dad. Mom and dad need to watch themselves in the recruiting process. Sometimes moms and dads, and I think a bigger thing is behavior at games. You know, parents' behavior at games is observed quite closely by college coaches. And I know college coaches in a lot of different sports that have seen parents act like complete fools at games. And that does affect at times the way they look at potential kids. If it's coming down to player A and player B, and they're similar in skill set, and player A's mom and dad, real cool throughout the process, laid back, you know. Meanwhile, parents of player B, oh, Johnny's the greatest of all time. You know, the coach didn't really treat him fairly at the high school level and stuff like that. And then, you know, they're yelling at games, you know, stuff unsportsmanlike, you know, either toward referees or the other team or something like that. I'm telling you, people watch that stuff. Coaches watch that stuff. And if it comes down to player A or player B and they're similar in talent, they're going to take the player that's probably got the nicer folks that aren't going to be a problem. Because you know as well as I do, Alex, when player B doesn't get playing time in the first half of that freshman year, mom and dad are emailing, they're calling, they're why isn't Johnny playing? Why isn't Jenny playing right now? And that's the last thing a coach wants to be dealing with at the college level is parents that are calling thinking it's just like playing, you know, youth lacrosse, we're cutting up orange slices and stuff like that. Just because you buy that uniform and travel across doesn't give you the right to have one when you get to college lacrosse. You have to earn that uniform when you get to the college level.
Absolutely. I mean, I've seen it happen, and it's not fair to the kid, you know. Now, I guess in terms of there's two more before I let you go. There's two things I want to ask you. Number one is, I'm a Jersey guy. This is a Jersey podcast. I'm a Rutgers alum. You have broadcasted many of our Rutgers games. One in particular was tougher than the rest. I'm sure you know which one I'm thinking of.
Would that be Maryland in overtime?
Triple overtime.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, man.
Number 40. Number 40 for Maryland.
Connor Kelly.
Yep. Yep.
That was our game, man.
Still one of the best games I've ever done. Certainly best regular season games. Fantastic game.
Yeah, that game's rough. But, just wanted to, I guess, ask about I want to ask your thoughts about this Rutgers team in 2022, coming off a year where it was arguably the best team in school history, likely the best team in school history. They had Kirst, Mullen, Charlon Beatties, and Colin Kirsten Gull, who is back this year. A lot of guys kind of doubted them, didn't think they could reload. I saw them play live against Loyola last week, and I think Loyola, they're struggling, but it's a pretty solid Loyola team that just needs to find its way. What's your thoughts on this Rutgers team? Do you think they can make some noise in conference play and maybe take it a step further come NCAA tournament time if we're fortunate enough to make it?
Obviously, Kirst, you know, helps considerably. I mean, let's face it, in our sport, when you have a goalie now that's a shot stopper, some guys get hit by the ball, and some guys are shot stoppers. You know, in this sport, some guys position themselves well, get hit by the ball, but then there are guys that really take it to another level and are elite, you know, netminders. And in this league, you've got to be, you have to be one of those. You can't survive. It starts there. But also keep in mind, just because, you know, like I mentioned earlier, when you have an Adam Charlambides and some of the people, and first of all, I'm an unabashed Brian Brecht fan. I'm a gigantic Brian Brecht guy.
Want to hear a fun fact about Brian Brecht?
Sure.
He's won a third of the total Big Ten Coach of the Year awards.
Completely understandable.
And I believe a third of Big Ten coaches were once Brian Brecht assistants.
that's even better. Yes. Dixie tied that in during some of the broadcasts. I mean, look, I'm an unabashed Brian Brecht fan. I love our conversations with him. He's always very open with us, very direct, doesn't, you know, hide anything, doesn't, you know, talk in a lot of cliches, very open and honest with us about the product. And let's face it, when you recruit the type of players that he has over the last, you know, 5 or 6 years there to help build that program and help build this league, there's no question that they're going to be a consistent contender. These wins against Army and Loyola are no joke. These are great wins, and they're going to have a couple more opportunities coming up. You know, Princeton's going to be a great challenge coming up here as well for them. So, you know, even though they didn't, quote, get an ACC team on the schedule, they still got quality people. And when people look back at the end of the year and they consider the Rutgers resume, you know, those are going to be terrific out-of-conference opportunities that they're taking advantage of right now. And, you know, just because, I mean, look, let's face it. I mean, you're talking about some significant people, significant firepower that this team has had over the last couple of years that finally has cycled out. But what's the key to building a program? When they cycle out, having players that when it's their opportunity, you know, to step up like now, like, you know, Bartolo and Jacoby and Scott. And I mean, look at Ryan Gallagher. I think Ryan Gallagher's taken like one shot on the year, put one shot on frame, but he's making plays, you know, as a playmaker with 8 assists so far. And it's while you may not necessarily have the elite individual, one guy, you've got a bunch of guys right now that are stepping up and providing the same thing. They're just accomplishing it in a little bit of a different way right now. But that's a testament to Brian and his staff and the work that they do, because how do you build a program? You can be a flash in the pan when you get a couple of good recruits and it all works out for you. But how do you stay relevant in this sport right now? You build a program. And when good players cycle out, good players cycle in and continue to do things for you. You know, DeGenio's, I think it's 60%, 61% in face.
He's doing great.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, you have to have the ball to score. So if you got a guy going at a 60 or 61% clip in this game right now, that's a huge, huge check mark for your team, to getting the ball. So, I don't think there's any question they're going to have a chance to compete. The question is, you know, like all teams in the Big Ten, you know, do you bring your A product every single Saturday or Sunday right now in this league? If you do, you're going to give yourself a great chance to win. But I think Brian's done that by building a program. Yes, they've had great individual players within it, but it's building a program. It's building that culture. It's retaining those players. And I think that speaks volumes when guys like that are willing to stay with your program for 4 and 5 years, you know, given the extra year and stuff like that. That tells you everything you need to know about the quality of the program. Not only is it a great place to play on game day, but it's a great place to be every day. And I think that's what coaches in this sport want to build. And every sport, that's what you want to build. You want to build a program that kids want to be there every day. They can't wait to get to the locker room, grab their equipment and get out there and practice and be part of a great culture and a great program. And we see the finished products, you know, under the lights and on a Saturday afternoon and stuff like that. But what really builds a great team is guys being willing to run to that locker room when they're out of class every day, grab that equipment and get out to the field and be with their brothers or sisters, you know, on the respective sides. And and get to work and get ready for that next opportunity, you know, under the lights for a Saturday afternoon that presents itself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, well, first of all, you mentioned Ryan Gallagher. The Loyola game was not broadcasted because it started later. I was at the game. So I have to tell you, he came around GLE and absolutely stung the corner and got absolutely nailed. And then he gets up and he just goes crazy. And Ryan's not a big guy. He's like 5'5".
Right, right.
And he gets up, he gets him going. His leadership has been great for them this year. And then seeing it in person for the first time was awesome. He's playing great. He's going to be a big part of their midfield, big part of their depth and why they're able to, I don't want to say replace David Sprock, because you don't replace an athlete like that. He's right. He's a one-of-a-kind workhorse. But their depth has really shown with the loss of Sprock, and putting Jacoby from attack to midfield with Brian Cameron coming in, I think that that balances their offense a little bit. And I've seen Ross Scott in person a lot over the years. Seeing him against Loyola in the fourth quarter last week, he was unguardable. He's like, he wears number five. He's got a little Michael Sowers in him. Michael Sowers 5.0.
Hey.
So he's got a little Michael Sowers in him.
If he's remotely close on a week by week basis to Michael Sowers, they're going to be in great shape as this season goes along. Believe me.
Yeah. And then the last thing you mentioned, Dehenio. So John is a tremendous athlete. He's facing off really well. I think he's above 60% this year. Last year he was around 40%, but he had 10 points. And because of his stick skills and his ability to move the ball, they got a lot of offense, in situations where John won 8 faceoffs and lost 12 faceoffs, but they scored 2 or 3 goals off 2 of those 8 faceoff wins. And take whatever their offensive efficiency was, because they scored those 2 goals, that's like getting a couple extra wins. So I think last year, John really made the most out of his opportunities despite low numbers. But this year he's taken his game to a whole nother level from getting possession, and he's additionally super skilled. So,
I mean, think about this, guys, that when you can win a faceoff cleanly and immediately put your team in a transition opportunity out of that. You know, we get a lot of guys where they're great at faceoffs, but we know their stick skills aren't great. So it's like, hey, as soon as you win that faceoff, you find somebody, get them the ball, and you get off the field. But when you get a guy that can create transition opportunities off faceoff wins like that, and is an absolute threat himself, either in a passing, you know, situation or a shooting situation, It adds so much pressure to what you put on the defense of the other team. And that it's a great element. Teams that can get it, it's almost like an extra offensive unit in itself. It's almost like a special teams unit of its own. When you have a faceoff guy, not only that can win at that clip, but then can try and establish transition opportunities like that, where teams actually have to slide to the faceoff guy coming below the restraining line with the ball. And all of a sudden you've facilitated offense for your team. It's almost like another special team within itself.
Yeah. And he's another one of those transfers, not a grad transfer, but he came in from St. John's. He's a Bridgewater Raritan kid, which is a Rutgers hotbed for guys. Scott Beda, Big Ten Offensive Player of the Year, Bridgewater guy, Ryan Hollingsworth, Bobby Russo. And then if you go back years and years, you know, Aaron Cardilla, who's got a couple of really good sons actually coming into Rutgers, who are top recruits in the country in the classes of 22 and 23. So Rutgers isn't going anywhere, because I think recruits want to go there. Grad transfers probably over the next 2 years will probably want to continue to go there because of the culture and the opportunities the university provides them. So
I think too, plus Brian and his staff, they play a really good style of lacrosse. I think that is, you know, that kids want to be a part of.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got some creativity, they let you do that. And that's, I think that's what kids, especially highly skilled kids, are looking for. Am I going to have a coach that wants to micromanage my every move on the field like a chessboard? Or when the opportunity presents itself, are they going to let me play? Are they going to let us play this out as a group. Trust us on the field. And I think that's something that, you know, in our conversations with Brian over the last couple of years, when you have the kind of people that they had, those players earned the trust of that staff. And thus those guys were able to, you know, do a lot of things out there using their creativity because they knew how to play. They made the right decisions. They played off of each other. And that's part of that trust that builds up. And again, that's a culture thing. And I think, you know, if a kid walks up to Adam Charlin Beatty's and says, hey, I'm being recruited by Rutgers, you know, what's it like to play for Brian Brecht? You know, those kids are going to speak glowingly about the program and about the coach and about the culture that's been established there. I don't think there's any question about that.
Absolutely. And it's a tribute to those guys who are there, who are keeping it going, and they do a tremendous job. So before I let you go, Pete, number one, I want to thank you for the time. I mean, I think we're only supposed to go for like 15, 20 minutes, and here we are like 45, 50 minutes later. I mean, thank you so much. And I'm getting into this media world, and but I guess what's it take to be in sports broadcasting, and what does it take to be in sports media?
I think there's a lot of want to by people. Biggest things I tell people, you got to be fun. You've got to be comfortable talking in front of people and talking to audiences. You know, my speech teacher told me in 10th grade, you know, he goes, you're different. You know, I got kids that I can barely get to come up here to the podium to do their speeches. He goes, you race up to the podium and you're almost willing to do their speeches for them if they can't do it. So I think you have to be comfortable talking to people and talking to an audience. But one thing I learned from Bob Soucy, the current voice of the New England Patriots, who I backed up at Navy for several years, was the preparation factor. And you've got to be prepared. That's why these conference calls that we do with all these coaches are so valuable to us, because it gives us insight that we can then take to the broadcast that helps tell the story each and every week of these teams that we're doing. And I know for some of them, you know, they probably would like to do something else with their 20 to 30 minutes that they spend with us. The Big Ten coaches have been fabulous. Every one of them that I've dealt with so far in any of the games we've broadcasted. And that's the key. They help us tell the story of their programs. And I think all of the folks in the Big Ten realize that. And I think they respect us and the job that we do. And obviously we respect the job that they're trying to do with their programs. And it's upon us to help tell their stories each and every week. So if there is a recruit watching the game, you know, to tell them about that program during that broadcast, that's very important. That's part of that preparation process, because as long as you're prepared, just like as a player, as an official, just like anybody that does any job, if you're prepared to go to work every day, you're usually going to do decent work and people are going to ask you to come back. And, you know, been pretty blessed. I've been doing games at Navy, you know, since 1998 in different capacities. And, you know, obviously catching on the Big Ten Network to do lacrosse is, you know, the number two there behind Beninati has been just an incredible honor for me. And, you know, you just hope that somebody sees your work and is willing to ask you to do more. But, you know, just like you're doing with the podcast, I mean, people that there are so many. When I started, you basically had to go to a radio station and say, hey, you know, I think I could do this for you. You know, do you have some airtime that we could do it? You know, now, you know, anybody can start a podcast in 10 minutes and start to build an audience and start to get reps. You know, we talk about, just like in lacrosse, we talk about getting reps. We talk about all sports, getting reps. Well, doing a podcast, talking about it, and having something that you can take to someone and say, hey, you know, here's an example of my work. We didn't really have those things outside of taking a tape recorder with a cassette tape, going to games and practicing and giving somebody, you know, in the 80s, late 80s and 90s when I started out in this business. Now it's so much, there's so many tools and resources available to potential broadcasters that, you know, you can start a podcast in 10 minutes and be off and running.
Yeah. And I'm doing my first game on April 2nd, Lehigh Lafayette, ESPN Plus. So I'm a little nervous, but I'm going to prepare hard and hopefully make the most out of it.
Just remember, especially, are you doing play-by-play or color?
I'm doing both. I'm the only man in the booth.
Okay. The key is who has the ball, what's their name, and who they're passing to. You know, keep it simple. You know, that's the best thing. The best advice I can tell you is just keep it simple, you know, during the course of the game. Because the things that matter the most to the audience, who scored the goal, who made the save, you know, who had the assist, a player identification, you know, that's the most important part of any broadcast. Just do the fundamental things correct. And then everything else, because of your knowledge of lacrosse, will take care of itself. So, you know, that's the big thing. Just make sure you got player identification correct, because that's the most important thing. There's nothing worse than saying, "Hey, that's a goal for Johnny Smith," except it was Bobby Wallace who scored the goal.
I know, right?
Those are the moments we hate. So, I mean, I'll give you an example. A couple of weeks ago, I've officiated basketball at the high school level for years. Last year, they changed a rule in college basketball where if a team turns it over in the backcourt to the other team, and it's a live ball turnover, shot clock resets to 30. But if they throw it out of bounds and the other team gets the ball, shot clock resets to 20. And I botched that rule late in the game, and I knew something was up because I kept questioning it. But I knew there's no chance they're going to put 20 on the clock if it's not the right rule. And it beat me up all afternoon. I drove 4 hours to watch my son coach a game that night. And the whole drive, I'm just like, gosh, I can't believe I did that. But that's what, you know, if you have pride in what you do, you know, it's just like a player who has a bad game. If you have pride in what you do, you don't feel great about it after the game. You know, if you can walk away from the broadcast going, yeah, you know, I think I did well there. Because I think sometimes we get lip service from people. You guys were great. You guys were great. And sometimes I'll walk away and go, I didn't think I was great. You appreciate the praise, but if you hold yourself to a high standard, that will keep you trying to reach that standard each and every broadcast. So yeah, just keep it fundamentally simple for yourself, because your knowledge of lacrosse will take care of everything else.
Awesome. That's fantastic advice. And the people I've talked to, including yourself, have been so generous with advice. So it seems like a great community to be a part of.
Yeah. The people that I've met in all parts of this industry, you know, are spectacular. I mean, you know, Charlie Slows and Dave Jagler, who I work with, you know, on the Nats broadcasts, and everybody, like I said, you know, your sports information people are going to be huge. You know, in your preparation, I know my guy, Justin LaFleur, Lehigh, he's eager to help you with anything that you need. I got Lehigh tomorrow, as a matter of fact, against Navy. So lean on those people, you know, anything that you need from a notes, or if you have questions about players and stuff like that, lean on those folks, because that's what they're there for. And I know they're all willing to help you.
That's actually one of my matchups for I'm doing face-off previews for Inside Lacrosse. That's actually one of my matchups I'm writing about. I'm going to post that. I'm going to submit that tonight.
It'll be a good game.
Yeah.
Patriot League opener for both. And, you know, it's one of those leagues right now. I think everybody is so close that, you know, like if you're Navy, any win you can get on the road in this league this year, it's going to be a gift. I mean, look, don't let Loyola's slow start, you know, throw people off the trail. The Greyhounds are still going to be pretty good when it matters here. Charlie's too good of a coach. They got too many good players for them not to. They've played a challenging schedule. When you play a challenging schedule, sometimes you lose.
Yeah, they've still got Duke and Georgetown.
I mean, that's the risk of playing a challenging schedule. Sometimes you lose because both teams are good. So. But they're going to be around, and they're going to be there when it matters.
Absolutely. Well, Pete, thank you so much for coming on the show, and looking forward to staying in touch, man. You're awesome. Like,
appreciate it, Alex. Glad to do it anytime.
Welcome inside, everybody. Pete Van Hurst alongside Mark Dixon. Live from Maryland Stadium in College Park, Maryland. Today, it's number 3 Maryland taking on number 4 Rutgers. Rock from top. Holmgren shot. He scores. David Sprock, the shooter out of Dallas. The Eastern night in Piscataway, New Jersey, is High Point Solutions Stadium. Plays host to the Rutgers Scarlet Knights and the Maryland Terrapins. George. Back to his right shoulder. Davis Allen stays with him. George comes inside.